Let's turn now to Ecclesiastes chapter 10 as we continue our study in the words of the preacher, the Ecclesiastes. Solomon is identified as the writer, written in his later years, when he had turned his heart away from the Lord, and he sees in this book the emptiness and the futility of life at its best apart from Christ. He had tasted of everything. He had done everything. He said there is not a single thing that he desired that he did not withhold from himself. And yet, having tasted of it all, he speaks of the emptiness of it all. The emptiness of all of those worldly accomplishments, worldly glory, the riches and the fame was empty in and of themselves. But in chapter 10, he continues really with the thought that we had at the end of chapter 9. You do understand that when Solomon wrote this, he didn't write it in chapters. Chapter 9, verse 18, and then opened up chapter 10. But it's just one book, one scroll, without any divisions. Those divisions were created later for our benefit. It's a lot easier to look up a scripture because you have it in the chapters and verses, so we can make reference to a particular scripture. But originally, it wasn't set out that way. Now, in setting it out in chapters, it's extremely handy for us in referencing scriptures. But unfortunately, we in our Western mind and the way we read, when we come to the end of a chapter, we think, well, that's the end of that chapter, and now we're going to begin a new chapter kind of a thing. And we don't often carry through the thought from the previous chapter. So you say, well, I'm going to read five chapters of the Bible tonight. And you may be quitting right in the middle of a thought. If you'd read on the next chapter, then you'd carry on. And in studying it as we are, when we're just taking a few chapters a week, unfortunately, we many times are making a break right in the middle of a development of a thought. And such is the case in chapter 9 and chapter 10, and even in 11 and 12. There should be no break, but fortunately we won't break tonight. We will go right through, and we'll see the continuation of thought. But in the previous chapter, he was talking about a city that was being besieged by a strong enemy, and there was this wise man, poor man, but he was very wise, and he delivered the city by his wisdom from this powerful enemy that was besieging the city. So he came to the conclusion that wisdom is better than weapons of war. However, one sinner can destroy a lot of good. Now, in that idea, one sinner can destroy a lot of good, he goes right into the thought that dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking odor. The flies, when they would swarm into the oil of the apothecary, the sort of the perfumed oils, they would keep them covered, because if the flies begin to swarm in it, it isn't long before it begins to get rotten and begins to stink. And so it was something that was very common to their relating to life. I mean, he talks about this and they understood exactly what it means. We think dead flies in the ointment of the apothecary, you know, what's that all about? But the people at that time understood completely as they saw these swarms of flies and they would get into the oil, the perfumed oils, and turn them into a stinking odor. But the analogy that he is drawing, so doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. You take a man who has a great reputation for wisdom, a man who is held in high esteem and honor. All it takes is just a little folly to turn that whole opinion of the man. The idea is one sinner can destroy much good. It just takes a little bit. Just a little folly can take a man who is in authority, power, great reputation, and just bring him down very quickly. So a little folly to him who is in reputation. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, and a fool's heart is at his left. Now, the idea behind that is a wise man's heart will lead him to right things, to right actions, whereas a fool's heart will lead him to wrong activities and wrong actions. The idea was the right hand was always the place of honor, respect, and esteem. The left hand was really the place of sort of put down or rejection. You remember Jesus, when he comes again, will gather together the nations and he will separate them as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goat. And to those on his right hand, he will say, "Come ye blessed of the Father, inherit the kingdom." The right hand, the place of honor, it leads to honorable things. However, the fool will lead to dishonorable things. Yea also, when he that is a fool walks by the way, his wisdom faileth. And he soon reveals to everybody that he is a fool. I mean, a fool just can't hide it. It's going to come out. As he walks in the way, it becomes very obviously the guy's a fool. So his actions speak to everybody the fact that he is a fool. Now, changing the thought, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee, leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. Basically, he is making reference here to a man who sits as a counselor to a king. And the king doesn't follow your counsel, or he turns from the advice that you have given him. Thus his spirit rises up against the counsel. Don't get in a huff and quit and say, "Well, if you're not going to listen to me, then I'm leaving," you know. Don't remove from your place. For yielding will bring peace even where there have been great offenses. Just give the point. A soft answer turneth away wrath. It's so easy to bring an end to a dispute by just saying, "Well, maybe you're right." You know, what difference does it make? I'm amazed at what a great fire a little matter kindleth. You know, some of the big fights that you have are over whether or not it was dark chocolate or milk chocolate, you know. And divorces can come about from such things. I mean, it just builds up and up and up and up and up, you know. And yielding will pacify great offenses. You say, well, you're probably right. And that's the end of it. It ends all of the argument, the offense, and the fighting, and the bitter feelings and all that rise out of it. Now, he said, there's an evil which I've seen under the sun. It's an error that many times proceeds from the ruler. For I have seen folly that has been set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a low place. The exalting, really, of the fools, and the denigrating of the wise. I have seen servants upon horses, riding in the place of honor, while princes were walking as the servants on the earth. So I've seen a reversal of order, he said. I've seen fools that have been exalted while the wise men are sort of put down. I've seen princes who were put down while the servants were exalted. And here's a proverb. In fact, there's a few here. He that digs a pit shall fall into it. You set a trap for someone else, and quite often you're caught in your own trap. In our neighborhood, there is a posted 25-mile-an-hour speed zone. The people don't always observe it. And every once in a while, some of the people in the neighborhood call the Newport Beach Police Department, and they ask them to set up a radar unit to keep the people at the proper speed to make sure that they don't exceed the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit. The interesting thing about that is that the people who called and complained and asked that the police set up the radar trap were invariably the ones that got caught exceeding the speed. And it's sort of a joke in the neighborhood, because the fellow who called and did the most complaining got caught himself for speeding. So you dig a pit, and that is the idea of digging a pit for a trap, to trap an animal or whatever. He who digs the pit will fall into it himself. And whoso breaks a hedge or a wall, a serpent shall bite him. Now, they used to have these rock walls between their vineyards. And if a person goes to break down a rock wall, there are these little snakes that would nest in these rock walls. And so in taking down a rock wall, you were very apt to be bitten by a snake. It's the idea, it's a dual type of a digging a pit, you'll fall into it. You go to hurt someone by breaking down their wall, and you will get hurt. You'll be bitten by the serpent. And whoever removes the stones, these stones were the markers for the field, and a person would try and pick up a little extra acreage by going out and moving these stones that marked off the limits of the field. If you go to remove the stones, you'll be hurt therewith. And he that splits wood shall be endangered thereby. Now, if the iron and that is the axe is dull. If you do not sharpen the edge, then you've got to put more strength to the job. But wisdom is profitable to direct. In other words, rather than using all of your strength with a dull axe, it takes a little effort to sharpen it, and it takes then a lot less effort to do your job. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. And a babbler is no better. Now, that is, a babbler will bite you. A person who's just, you know, there are people who are just mouthy. And the Bible here calls them babblers. And unless a serpent is enchanted. Now, they did have those guys with the flutes and the serpents, you know, they were enchanted. The serpents and all. And unless they are enchanted and all, they'll strike. But so with a babbler, a mouthy person, they'll strike you. You got to watch out for them. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow him up. So you can tell what a man is by his words. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. That is the fool. They'll swallow him up. His words start off with foolishness, and the end of it is just mischievous madness. A fool also is full of words. But a man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? People do a lot of talking, but really you don't know what is going to take place tomorrow. The labor of the foolish worrieth every one of them, because he knows not how to go to the city. Woe to thee, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes eat in the morning. Now, the idea is that of dining and eating. And if your princes are eating in the morning, you're in trouble. It means that they're drinking in the morning and eating, and they really should be about their business during the day. But they're playboys eating in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes eat at the proper time. And they eat not for pleasure, but they eat for strength, and not for drunkenness. By much slothfulness, the building decayeth. I think we all know that, don't we? Our houses, they need constant upkeep. And it's sort of a frustrating thing when you just see your house going to pieces in front of you and you just don't have the time to do the things that you need to do to keep the house up. So by much slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands the house just drops through. A feast is made for laughter, wine makes merry, but money answers all things. Now, how many of you really believe that? Money is the answer to everything. You know, there are people that do believe that. Anything and everything can be answered by money. Curse not the king. No, not in your thought. And curse not the rich while you're in your own bedroom. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. Have you ever heard them say, a little bird told me? You ever wonder where they got that? This is the scripture where that saying comes from. Where Solomon says, just be careful what you say, even in secret, even in the privacy of your own home. It's amazing how you know, your words can get out, how you can be exposed. And so just be careful of the things that you say, even in secret. Cast your bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Now, there are those who understand this and interpret it as the bread meaning the wheat or the grain from which the bread is made. And in Egypt, they used to have a practice in the flooding of the Nile River, when it was overflowing its banks, to just stand there where the banks were overflowing and toss their wheat into the water. The overflowing bank, you know, the overflowing river, overflowing bank. Just toss the wheat in. And of course, it's carried out then into the plains, into this rich soil that is being carried with the flood. And that was the way they spread their seed. Rather than going through the fields, they would just toss it on the water and let the river carry it into the fields that were beside the river at the time of overflow. And then it would take root and they would have a rich, rich harvest of wheat. And they think that Solomon is making reference to that practice of casting the wheat on the water. In you will find it after many days. It'll grow, it'll come up, and you'll have a rich harvest. The idea is that of receiving by giving away. Now, it is a strange principle that is taught in the Bible, a spiritual principle, and that is a person who gives shall receive. And you gain by giving. Jesus expressed the principle. He said, give, and it shall be given unto you. Pressed down, measured out, and running over shall men give into your bosom. He said, by whatsoever measure you mete it out, it will be meted back to you again. Paul said that. If you sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you will reap bountifully. So the more you give to the Lord, to others, the more you're going to receive. God will never be a debtor to you. The more you give to God, the more God is going to return to you. He'll never be your debtor. It's an important spiritual principle that many people do not follow because they cannot logically understand it. It doesn't make sense that the more I give, the more I'm going to get. My logic tells me the more I hoard, the more I'm going to have. But when Paul made this analogy, I can begin to understand it. He said, the more, or he who sows sparingly, in other words, if you go out to sow your wheat and you just drop a seed here and drop a seed there and you sow very sparingly, I want to be very careful how I sow my wheat, you know, just a seed here, a seed there, then you're going to have just a little shoot here, a little shoot there, you know. You're not going to have much of a crop. But if you go out and just throw out the seed everywhere, you know, as you're sowing the wheat, then you're going to have a bumper crop of wheat. You're going to have wheat coming up all over the place. So the more you give, the more you get. It's the idea that Paul is seeking to put across in this illustrating the principle of giving. Sowing sparingly, reaping sparingly, sowing bountifully, reaping bountifully. So cast your bread upon the water, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, also to eight. Be giving, For you know not what evil shall be upon the earth. You don't know what's going to happen to you in days to come. It may be that you're going to need help one of these days. If you're generous, if you're giving to people, then if you are in need, they will be helpful and generous to you. And you don't know what the future may hold for you. And thus, the encouragement to go ahead and be generous with others. Because it may be in the future, they'll be in a good position and you'll be in a poor position, and they'll be able to return then the favor to you. You remember Jesus gave the parable of the steward who was the accountant for his master, and his master said, hey, you know, get the books in order, you're going to be fired 2 weeks. So the fellow said, man, I don't know, what shall I do? I'm too proud to beg, and I'm too weak to dig ditches, to labor. I know what I'll do. And he called in all of the creditors of his master, and he cut their bills in half. How much do you owe my master? 100 barrels of oil. Here, let me have your bill. And he wrote 50. And he cut all of the bills in half so that when he got fired, he could go around and say, hey, you remember what I did for you? I cut your bill in half. I need, you know, $5, you know. You suppose you can spare it? And so he took advantage of his position to set himself up for the future. Jesus said he was wise. He didn't say he was honest. He just said he was wise. And he commended the wisdom of the man because he took advantage of his present position to set himself up for the future. And so Jesus said, make use of the unrighteousness of money so that when you fail, when you die, you might be received into the everlasting habitations. So the idea is you don't know what the future holds, and so be generous with what you have, and you'll find that it will come back to you in the future. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. If the tree falls toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it lies, there it shall be. So the clouds, you see them, cloudy day, but yet they empty themselves upon the earth. They give what they have. And then they seem to keep having sufficient to keep giving. As the tree falls, so it lies. Now, he that observes the wind, you see, there are always difficulties that we can imagine if I give what I have to others. And if you start considering the difficulties of these things, many times you will not do them. He that observes the wind will not sow. Looks like it's a windy day today. I better not plant the seed. I'll just stay in, you know, and sit by the fire and kick back today. It's too windy to sow. But if you don't sow, you can't reap. And so he that regards the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds shall not reap. You can't let problems or difficulties stop you from doing what is necessary in life. Anything and everything that we do is fraught with danger or with problems or with difficulties. But you can't just say, well, I'm not going to do it because, you know, there are real problems that could arise from that. Now, people oftentimes do that. They let the difficulties stop them from important activities for God. And there are some people that can always see and define the difficulties. But if you just are looking for trouble, it's there. I mean, you can find problems and you can find possibilities for problems in everything. I have a friend who was a professor of mine and a man who taught me so much, and I admire him tremendously. He has been a mentor to me for years. In my younger years, I traveled with him extensively just to glean from him. And his wife was one of those persons who could always see the problems or the dangers that might exist. And she was always saying, but that could be dangerous. Don't you realize that this could happen or that could happen? And she was always pointing out the potential or possible dangers in anything and everything that you might want to do. And finally, one day he just turned to her and he said, honey, living is dangerous. And that's true. Living is dangerous. But you can't quit living just because it's dangerous. So it's sort of the warning against that kind of inactivity that rises out of the possible difficulties that may exist. Now, even as you don't know what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones grow in the womb of the mother who is with child, even so you do not know the works of God who makes all things. We don't really know or understand the works of God. We don't really know the way of the Spirit. Jesus said concerning the Spirit in John 3, the Spirit blows wherever it wishes. You hear the sound of it, but you can't really tell where it's coming from or where it's going. So is he that is born of the Spirit. And so talking about the Spirit moves in interesting ways. We don't understand the moving of the Spirit. There are some times when I feel, oh, the Spirit ought to really move now, and it doesn't seem to move. And then there are other times I think, man, what a quench. The Spirit sure can't move here, and he does. And we just don't understand the moving of the Spirit. And that's what Solomon is saying here. We really don't understand how the bones of the child are formed within the womb. Marvelous. The ways of God, the formation of new life within the womb. And so, we don't really know the works, the ways of God, who makes all things, makes that child in the womb. Marvelous, marvelous, marvelous miracle. So in the morning, sow your seed, whether it's windy or not. In the evening, do not withhold your hand. That is from helping others, giving to others. For you know not whether it will prosper either in this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. So get out and do your work, give to others, don't slack. And you really don't know what may come of it, but it isn't necessary. It's just necessary that we do what the Lord has commanded us to do. It's necessary that I sow seed. It isn't really necessary that I reap the harvest. God has called us to be his witnesses. Whether or not people accept or reject is not your problem. You are to just share the truth of God. You're just to share the love of God. You're to share the word of God. Plant the seed in their hearts. Sow the seed of God's word to people, and then leave with God what comes of it. Don't worry about it. Oh, I was witnessing all week long. No one, you know, would listen to me. Keep witnessing. Go out and do your job. Do what you're supposed to do. And leave the rest with the Lord. Truly, the light is sweet. And it's a pleasant thing for the eyes to behold the sun. Daytime is a great time. But if a man lives many years and he rejoices in all of them, let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many. All that come is vanity. You might live a good life, a long life, see a lot of daylight and all, but a day of darkness is coming, man, is what Solomon is saying. And they're going to be many too. And all that you've done is going to come to nothing. Well, not quite so. As we pointed out in our Parson to Person this morning in the bulletin, Paul the Apostle encourages us in 1 Corinthians 15 by declaring to us that your labor for the Lord is not in vain. Whatever you do for God is never in vain. And as I said, God calls you to sow the seed, to plant the seed, His word, in the hearts of people, in the minds of people. Now, you're paid not by commission. You're just paid a salary for doing the job of sowing the seed. And you get the same pay whether or not there's any fruit or lots of fruit. You're not paid by the amount of fruit that comes from sowing the seed. You're just paid to sow the seed. So it's not up to you to say, well, I just, you know, have no success in sharing my faith with others. Whatever you do for the Lord is never in vain. God takes account of all that you do for Him, and your work for the Lord will be rewarded by Him. And the reward is not according to the amount of fruit that comes from it. You may not see any fruit of your labor. God may not call you to reap. As Paul said, one sows, one waters. God gives the increase. So he that sows is nothing, he that waters is nothing, but it is God who gives the increase. I knew a man, a missionary, who has long since gone to be with the Lord, who was a bank president in San Jose, California, when he accepted the Lord. And he felt called of God as the result of a vision to go to Panama to preach the gospel, to be a missionary to Panama. He had this vision. And there, in his vision, he saw this old, gray-haired, gray-bearded man standing with one of these wooden plows. And there was a big field here that was needing cultivating. And the old man in the vision was just too weak, and he was calling, come and help me to reap the harvest. And in the vision, he was aware that the fellow was, the call was in Panama, and so he resigned as the president of the bank, and he sold things that he had, and he went to school and studied the language and prepared, and he went to Panama as a missionary. And he had tremendous success. He was a brilliant man, and he had tremendous success in his missionary endeavors in Panama. Built a very large church. Became well known throughout all of Panama. And one day he received a call from the hospital there in Panama. And they said, "We have an old man here in the hospital who is dying. He is sort of incoherent. He's sort of babbling. We can't understand what he is saying. And we don't have much background on this man, but we know that he, you know, was a Christian and he was some kind of a missionary. But, you know, we feel that it should, you know, some Christian should come and pray with him because he's not going to last long. Could you come over to the hospital and visit this man?" And so Dr. Edwards went over to the hospital. And when he walked into the room, he saw the gray-haired man with the gray beard that he had seen in his vision. And he prayed with the man. The man was just there praying in the spirit. He was praying. That's why they didn't understand him. He was just praying in tongues. And they said to him, "We don't understand what he's saying." And Dr. Everett said, "Don't worry, you never will." And the man died. And Dr. Everett became so interested, because this was the man that he had seen in the vision, that he began to inquire about him, and he found out that he was a Cumberland Presbyterian missionary. He had been down in Panama for years, and yet they could not find any converts. But he had been planting seed for years in Panama. And God gave to Dr. Edwards the privilege of going down and reaping the harvest from the seed that was planted by this man. Now, when they stand before the Lord to receive the rewards for the things done in their bodies, and the Lord gives the rewards for this great missionary work that was done in Panama, the thousands of people who came to Jesus Christ, according to God's books and God's accounting, that old gray-haired Cumberland missionary will get the same or equal reward as Dr. Edwards, who had the privilege of reaping the harvest that came from the seeds that were planted by this old man. Because God rewards you for your faithfulness in doing what he has called you to do. He's called you to sow the seed. In windy days or cloudy days or whatever, yours is to sow, cast the bread upon the waters. And so the whole idea of this section is that of the importance of us just doing the things that God has called us to do. Now, if you're not a child of God, then this does apply to you. Rejoice in the blessings or what you have, because in the days of light, the days in which you're alive, because man, when you go to the grave, you're going to be in the days of darkness for a long time, and everything that you've done is empty. It's all gone. There's nothing to show for your life of eternal value or of eternal good. But that's rather tragic, to live a whole life and not have anything of eternal value to show for your life. So his conclusion is to rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes, but know this, that for all of these things, God is going to bring you into judgment. Someday you're going to answer for it. Just remember that. You will give an accounting to God for your life. And you will receive the rewards for those things that you have done that were for eternal benefit and glory. Therefore, he said, remove sorrow from your heart, put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are emptiness. So remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Before those evil days come and the years draw nigh, when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Now, he's saying, while you're young, remember your Creator. Serve God. Take advantage of your youth in serving the Lord. Before those evil days, or while the evil days come not, or before they come, nor the evil years draw near. Now, evil is not the sense of wicked evil, but just the days of older age when you just can't get around as easy as you used to get around. Those days when you wake up and you ache all over and you say, oh my, you know, my aching body. The days in which you have no pleasure in them anymore. It's not, you know, you don't wake up excited and say, man, you know, wonder how the surf is today. But you say, oh, you know, it's hard to roll out of bed. You stand up rather slowly and you feel the cricks and the, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened, and the clouds nor the clouds return after the rain. Now he gives some interesting figures of speech for some of the problems that a person experiences as the body begins to wear out. The keepers of the house are your arms, your hands. So in the days when the keepers of the house shall tremble, you notice how people, when they get older, begin to tremble. I've noticed that my writing is beginning to get trembly. And I used to always think it was rather funny when my aunt would write to me in trembling script, but it's catching up with me now. The keepers of the house begin to tremble. And the strong men shall bow themselves. You begin to sort of hunch over, you know. And the grinders, that is your teeth, cease because they are few. Man, you're getting in bad shape now. No more steaks or corn. And your the windows being your eyes, they begin to get darkened. You can't see so well. And the doors shall be shut in the streets when the sound of the grinding is low. And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and all of the daughters of music shall be brought low. You can't hear very well. Hey, what was that? Say it again, you know. Daughters of music brought low. You wake up early. You don't sleep all, you know, soundly all night long anymore, you know, but you wake up with the birds in the morning. Also, when they shall be afraid of that which is high. Ooh, you know, stand up on the chair? No way. It's so high up here. And fear shall be in the way. The almond tree shall flourish. And the grasshopper becomes a burden. You know, you just you look out and that grasshopper just is a burden to you. And the desires shall fail. Hey. Used to be that surfing was important to me. Someone asked me, I've been surfing late. No, I've been years, you know. Desires failed, you know. Just things don't mean the same to you as you get older. I mean, it's just stuff that used to be so, you know, oh my, yes, let's go for it. Well, you sure you want to go for it, you know? Because man goeth to his long home, going home, going home. And the mourners go about the streets, you know. Man, one day, you know, you go home. They lay you in the ground, and the mourners go about the streets. The silver cord is loosed. The golden bowl is broken. The pitcher is broken at the fountain. Or the wheel is broken at the cistern. The wheel was the thing that they would use to put the rope down to pull the water out of the cistern. Broken. The pitchers broken at the fountain. The golden bowl, silver cord. Picturesque speech concerning death. And then shall the dust, the body, return to the earth as it was. Dust thou art, God said, and to dust you shall return. Speaking of the body of man, not speaking of the soul. As Longfellow put it so well, tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream, for the soul is dead that slumbers. Things are not what they seem. Life is real and life is earnest, and the grave is not thy goal. Dust thou art, to dust returneth, was not spoken of the soul, spoken of my body, goes back to the dust. But the spirit shall return to God who gave it. Body goes downward into the earth, but my spirit soars upward to God who gave me life. So here he is, end of the road. Vanity, he's about ready to go back to dust and leave this life. And how does he see it? Vanity of vanities, or emptiness of emptiness, saith the preacher, all is empty. So true of a life that is apart from Jesus Christ, it ends up empty, unfulfilling, unsatisfying, frustrating. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge, and he gave good heed, and he sought out and set in order many proverbs. As we pointed out, there were some 3,000 proverbs. He was wise, and he set things out in order so that you could understand. He set them in a way that made them attractive and teachable. And he sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, for they were words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. Now, the truth, the words of the wise are like goads. That is, the goad was the thing they used to use. They had a nail on the end of a stick, and when they were plowing with the oxen, if the oxen was getting lazy, they would take this stick with a nail on it and they would hit him in the flanks. They'd goad him. And he would, you know, and he'd get moving again. And remember the Lord when he apprehended Paul on the road to Damascus. He said, it's been hard for you to kick against the pricks. There's one thing that you don't want to do when you're being goaded is kick against it. You know, man, that thing really gets you then. So, and Paul had been kicking against the goads, is what the Lord, it's been hard for you to kick against those goads, absent Paul. And some of you have been kicking against the goads, and you find that you're the one that hurts. You're the one that suffers when you kick against the goads. But the wisdom is set out in ways that sort of challenge you. They catch your attention. And that was the purpose of setting them out in Proverbs and all, to capture your attention, to be a goad, to be a challenge to you. And the masters of assemblies, the masters were the teachers. Remember, they called Jesus master. They were the teachers in the assemblies. But there is only one real shepherd, and that's the Lord. And so that's what he's saying here. The words of the wise are like goads. They're like nails that have been fastened by the masters of the assemblies to stimulate you to think, to get you thinking. And yet there's just the one shepherd. And further, by these, my son, be admonished. Now, in the making of many books, there is no end. And in much study is weariness of the flesh. All of you that are in college, say amen. Much study, weariness of the flesh. I remember that in the books that I inherited in school, you know, you inherit it from the class above you. Your books have been used by others. I remember one of my Latin books in Santa Ana High School here had written in it, Latin is a language dead as dead can be. First it killed the Romans, and now it's killing me. And it just about killed me too. But another history book that I had written in it, the more you learn, the more you know. The more you know, the more you forget. The more you forget, the less you know. So what's the use of learning? And that's pretty much what Solomon is saying here. With much learning is weariness to the flesh. Much study. So let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. He says, this is it. Just fear God and keep the commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. This is why you exist. This is the purpose for life. God created you that you might fellowship with him, and living in fellowship with him, standing in reverence of God and in awe of God. The idea of fearing is worshipful fear or reverential fear of God. In the worship of God, awe of his greatness, of his power. Just fear God, keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty. This is the purpose of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Someday, you're going to stand before the eternal God, and all of the things that you have done will be brought, whether they be good or evil, unless you're a child of God and the evil is all erased. I love that. There is therefore now no condemnation to those that are in Christ Jesus. He's erased the negative aspect of my account, taking away my sin. But this is the whole duty of man. One day you'll stand before God. So fear God, keep his commandments. May the Lord bless you this week and prosper you in all that you do for him. And may we follow the exhortations of sowing the seed, of fearing God, keeping his commandments, doing the work of the Lord, and trusting God for the fruit that will come, committing those things to him. And so go out this week and sow seed. Cast your bread upon the waters. Give to 7 or to 8. Take advantage of the opportunities that you have now in knowing God, in serving God. And for you younger ones, remember the Creator in the days of your youth. Give your youth to Him, your strength of your youth, to serve Him. You'll never be sorry.